Firefighters expect to soon have a line all the way around the Lolo Creek Complex fire. Good evening, I'm Sarah Jovetich.
And I'm Courtney Anderson, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us the details of a pay raise agreement some university system employees will soon be voting on. And in our feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien talks with researcher Norman Nickerson about how visitors view their trips to Montana. No rain fell today on the Lolo Creek Complex fire, but no strong winds developed either. And crews are having what Information Officer Dave Schmidt describes as a very productive day. They're trying to secure the line on the difficult northern flank of the fire, at which point they will have the line the entire 11,000-acre fire.
Once we get the line completed, we still need to mop out back in a ways before we can call it contained. So the containment may go up tonight, but it wouldn't be because of that section. It'd be because we've done some work on other line and have a good buffer between the fire and the line.
Schmidt says crews have about two-thirds of the Blue Mountain Lookout wrapped in fire-resistant material, but the threat to the lookout and the observatory near there has diminished.
It's nice to say that. It's nice to be able to talk about containment coming up. We've got Canadian crews working with us today, five Canadian crews. So they're out on the line helping us out. So that's kind of nice to have. Appreciate their help, and appreciate the support of the public for all the firefighters. We've seen a lot of welcome signs and just nice thoughts and comments as we go through the community, so that's nice to have.
Over 900 people are now working on the Lolo Creek Complex fire.
And in other news from around the state, the largest union of Montana University System employees has reached a deal with the Commissioner of Higher Education regarding pay raises. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce says the deal between the Commissioner and the Montana Public Employee Association would affect pay for the next 2 years, but it still needs to be ratified.
State lawmakers gave the Montana University System $19 million earlier this year for employee raises. That spread over about 5,000 employees, but those 5,000 employees are split among 25 different employee unions. The university system has to negotiate with each union individually. The Montana Public Employee Association makes the biggest chunk of those employees, 1,700 workers. And here's how the potential pay raises for these so-called classified employees shakes out. Beginning this October, all of the 1,700 MPEA workers would receive a 46-cent per hour base pay raise. Then, starting October of 2014, the workers would receive a 2.25% raise plus another 12 cents per hour. MPEA Executive Director Quentin Nyman says at first the university system wanted to put in place the 2.25% plus 12 cents an hour for both years, but he says that would be less impactful to lower wage workers.
We wanted to see a flat dollar increase in the first year because the lion's share of our members would be more positively affected by that flat dollar increase.
Nyman says the agreement reached with the Office of the Commissioner of Higher Education also includes some other changes to the contract between the two organizations. This includes a committee study on workplace bullying. And Nyman says another study will look at recruitment and retention, which he says has been a problem.
We have close to 800 members who have worked for the university system for less than 5 years. And that's, in my mind, that's a pretty big number.
The MPEA members themselves will now vote on the bargain through mail ballot. The State Board of Regents will vote on ratifying the agreement during their meeting in mid-September. I'm Dan Boyce reporting at the Capitol.
Protesters are calling for the resignation of a Montana judge who said a 14-year-old rape victim was, quote, older than her chronological age, unquote, and had, quote, as much control of the situation, unquote, as her rapist. District Judge G. Todd Baugh made the comments Monday in handing former Billings senior high school teacher Stacey Rambold a 15-year sentence, then suspending all but 30 days. Baugh did not return calls to the Associated Press today. He earlier told the Billings Gazette that what he said was, quote, stupid and wrong, unquote. The teen in the case committed suicide when she was 16. Community organizer Sheena Rice says a protest tomorrow outside the courthouse will go on, despite the apology. She says Baugh should have known better as a judge than to blame the victim. She says a petition will be circulated calling for Baugh's resignation.
A 33-year-old Montana State University student has been charged with raping a teenage girl. Clemente Arcega was booked Monday in the Gallatin County Jail, where he is being held on $50,000 bond. The Bozeman Daily Chronicle reports the charges against him include sexual intercourse without consent. The charging documents say the girl's mother told campus police that Arcega had sexually assaulted her daughter. The girl told investigators the assaults happened numerous times over about 3 months. Documents say Arcega told investigators the girl's mother accused him because the mother was angry with him. It was not immediately clear whether he has hired an attorney.
More Montana candidates are announcing their intention to run for Congress. Glendive Republican State Senator Matthew Rosendale says he will run for either Congress or the U.S. Senate, depending on which race current Congressman Steve Daines chooses. Daines was elected to the House just last year, but says he is seriously considering a run for the Senate seat being vacated by Max Baucus in 2014. Rosendale says he represents what he believes are the conservative Christian values of most Montanans. He says his last two terms in the legislature show he can articulate the benefits of his worldview to those who look differently.
I would say the primary focus needs to be to return the authority to the state over different regulations that are being imposed on the state without any congressional oversight.
On the other side of the aisle, a longtime aide for Senator Max Baucus has become the first Democrat to officially file for the U.S. House. Former Baucus State Director John Lewis was raised in Billings and Missoula. He gained some notoriety working for Baucus in 2011 for meeting with mayors and local leaders of all of the state's 129 incorporated cities and towns in 1 year. A website has already popped up from the right attacking Lewis for working with Baucus as an architect of Obamacare. But Lewis spokesman Aaron Murphy says that site shows Republicans recognize his clout as a legitimate candidate.
Let's not forget he is a good man who will be a force in this race because he's a real Montanan. He's a fourth-generation Montanan who knows what it takes to create jobs and to cut debt and live within our means.
Two Republicans are officially running for Baucus' Senate seat right now, former State Senator Corey Stapleton and current State Representative Champ Edmonds. They're expected to move over to the House race if Congressman Daines runs for Senate. One politically unknown Democrat has announced his intentions to run for the Senate seat, Walsall area rancher Dirk Adams.
Yellowstone National Park has an estimated 4,600 bison roaming within its boundaries. The park counted the bison during its annual summer bison survey. The aerial survey found about 3,200 bison in the northern herd and 1,400 in the central herd this summer. There were about 700 calves of the year observed in a June aerial survey. This year's count represents an increase of 8.75% over last year's survey. The peak population estimate of 5,000 bison was recorded in the summer of 2005. The observed rate of population change this past year is within the natural range of expectation for wild bison.
Dr. Jesse Marcel Jr., who said he handled debris from the 1947 crash of an unidentified flying object near Roswell, New Mexico, has died. He was 76. Denise Marcel said her father was found dead at his home in Helena on Saturday, less than 2 months after his last visit to Roswell. Marcel's father was reportedly the first military officer to investigate the Roswell wreckage. Marcel Jr. said he was 10 when his father brought some of the debris home and woke him up so he could see it because it was something he'd never see again. Denise Marcel says her father wanted people to know that the Roswell incident was real and the cover-up needed to stop.
Most people visiting Montana and who choose to participate in a recent survey seem to have overwhelmingly positive comments about their experience here. This, according to a new analysis of non-resident visitor comments recently released by the Institute for Tourism and Recreation Research at the University of Montana. The Institute conducts travel and some recreation research for the entire state. Many of its projects are funded through a portion of bed tax revenues. Institute Director Norma Nickerson says this particular survey reveals a wealth of information about people who visit our state. In tonight's feature interview with Edward O'Brien, Nickerson says lots of visitors seem to leave our state with good feelings about their stay. First, more on how the survey was conducted.
We have 10 surveyors around the state. They have various regions that they intercept these non-residents at airports, gas stations, and rest areas. And they go up to those folks, introduce themselves, ask them if they would answer a few questions, and then we hand them a survey that they can mail back or they can do online if they choose to do that. And this is where we get a lot of our data then, is because it asks them about why they're here, where they're going, where they spent their nights, how much money they spent, what activities they did, what information sources they use. And recently we just added wireless technology information sources that they use while they're traveling. And it's just a full piece of information about non-residents.
And what's the return rate?
The return rate is on that is not as good as we would like, because obviously these people might lose this survey in their pile of things that they have in their car. But it's close to 30%. So it's adequate. We're trying to get it higher. But because we have this upfront data, we call it upfront, where we ask them a number of questions at the beginning, we can weight those who respond to what the full population of visitors would be. And so we feel comfortable with it. We just, of course, you always want more.
Okay, so 1,100 respondents, yes?
Well, 1,100 people on the survey who actually made comments. So we had way more surveys returned to us, but 1,100 of them felt like they should say some more.
And non-residents only?
This was just non-residents, yes. Most of our focus is on non-residents because that's where the economic impact is. That's new dollars coming into the state. Although we all want to know what everybody else is doing in the state and what's important to people who live here, so we do those things as well.
How is the comment section phrased? How is it set up?
It's very simple. It's usually at the very end of the survey, and it just says, tell us any other comments about things, you know, related to the survey or anything else in Montana. So they go off on whatever suits their fancy. And in this particular study that you're referring to, or this report, the comment section came after a number of questions that were related to what we call geotourism aspects, which is people who travel for the environment, to visit the authentic and the small towns and see the people and the working landscapes and all this kind of stuff. In other words, they're coming here because they like the way we live and what we have available to us, and they want to fit right in. And that's where you probably saw where a lot of people said, where's the recycling? And that was one of the questions that was in the survey. So they picked up on it because we really don't have in Montana a very good at all recycling program.
Who are these geotourists? Are they coming from a particular part of the country?
Geo travelers come from everywhere. And we do get a lot of people nearby, you know, our adjoining states and that sort of thing. And what's interesting, and I'm probably going to sidetrack here a little bit,
sure,
that the folks who are the international visitors, and we don't get that many, we get 5-7% that are overseas. The Canadians are international, so you add them in there, and we're over 12% of international visitors in Montana. But they are definitely a geo traveler. When you think about it, they want to come and see our culture. They are interested in what we do because we're different than they are. And so those folks definitely are looking for the restaurant that all the local people go to. They're looking for that bed and breakfast that's pretty unique. They're looking for the farmers markets, the events that our little communities and large communities put on, because that's how they can see who we are. The more of a geo traveler they are, the more likely they're going to spend a little bit more money. And depending on how much time they have, but in general, they will spend a little bit more time here, too.
Okay, it sounds like most of the comments on this survey were overwhelmingly positive. And when I say most, almost 90%.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, that's encouraging. When you think about when people want to make a comment, sadly, we tend to complain more than anything. Like, if something really bothered me, I happened to mention it to somebody, right? And that's what we'd see with that 11-10% of the people. Something really bothered them and they had to say something. But the rest of them had to say how wonderful this state was. The friendly people, that's things comes out all the time. The open space, the mountains, the vistas. And they want to tell us this. And it's so funny. I was looking at this before I got on the air with you, and I love this statement. Mother Nature blessed Montana. So far, man hasn't messed it up too much. You know, and I would think a lot of people would agree with that, that we are lucky. But saying luck is not the right thing either, because I think there's a lot of folks in Montana who have worked to keep it the way they want it because we live here and we don't want to mess it up. Saying that what the visitors say is not anything new to us, we're aware of it, and I think where Montana is lucky, there's a lot of people who are passionate, who live here and want to make sure we maintain our livelihood because that's why we're here.
Okay, travel-related issues.
Yes.
Roads, billboards, things like that. How do we rate among these people?
Good and bad. And that's the funny thing about the travel-related issues that came up. I don't want to say it was half and half, but they would say things that I didn't like this rest area. And then somebody else would say, oh, this rest area is wonderful. And so it's hard to determine. You know, everybody comes here with different perspectives. So what they pick up on is going to be different. If they were just at a rest area in another state that was really horrible to them, and then they hop into Montana and this one would happen to be clean, they're going to say that. And so what we find is with the travel issues, the road conditions, and again, it's both sides, but the road conditions, they do mention about construction. Because that's annoying.
It is.
We understand that.
And there's a lot of it, too.
The signage. We have a number of folks who tell us, I couldn't find such and such, or, you know, the signage wasn't so good. And on the other hand, we'll have people who say, the signage is wonderful. It's about right. It's interesting. The Bozeman Airport gets a lot of comments. Beautiful airport. But the other is weather. You know, obviously, if you're driving in the wintertime, the weather's sometimes not so nice. But then the fires. Obviously, we're into it right now with a lot of smoke everywhere all around the state and that sort of thing. And number of people, you know, too much smoke from fires, we'll try another time of year. You know, our dissatisfaction of the natural environment conditions was strictly due to the smoke from wildfires. And people mention that, but think about it if you were traveling. It would be kind of a bummer if you went to New Zealand to see all those lovely mountains and they were clouded over in smoke and you really didn't get a good view, especially when we call ourselves a big sky country.
Billboards. Too many? Too few? What?
Billboards are a funny thing. A lot of people just simply don't use them. And when we ask on the quantitative part of the survey, we ask them, you know, information sources. Billboards is one of them, as well as highway signs and whatnot. And then what was most useful to them? Billboards is always the bottom. Like 3% said it was most useful. And so it doesn't get a high rating. Now, some people want to know where a restaurant is or that there is one, but that's even changing more with this wireless technology. And if it's lunchtime and I'm driving through, oh, I feel like having, you know, a hamburger, let's look it up on my little smartphone and it tells me where I need to go. And it's going to be an interesting thing to see if billboards start, and I hate to say that because it's a business and people want to have their business operating, but the smartphone and the wireless technology is starting. That's where people are getting their information.
Yelp,
yeah. And any of the travel reviews, people use travel reviews.
Oh, yeah.
There's a restaurant they haven't heard of, and this is the thing that's probably an advantage to the geo traveler. You can find these franchise restaurants, motels, everywhere. But if you go on a travel review and see this restaurant that you've never heard of before, it's probably local. And you look it up, it's get good reviews, I'm going to go there.
It's so interesting how things are changing so rapidly.
It is,
yeah. Former residents come back to Montana, seems they're a little nostalgic.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you left, wouldn't you be nostalgic?
Oh my gosh, yes.
There's something about it. It grabs all of us who live here, and they want to move back. And then some people in Montana don't want to hear this, but we get a lot of folks saying, I'm looking for property, I'm going to retire here. Or I came to school here and I want to move here, but I can't because of the jobs. I mean, there's so many people that want to live in Montana, but because of the potential job availability, the economy, or, you know, there's jobs in Montana. But if you're used to making $110,000 in Denver, you're not going to make that here. And people aren't then willing to make that sacrifice. Hmm. But boy, they sure tell us, I'd love to live here.
No, Norma, we met firefighters last week working the Lolo Complex fire. And they said, I want to retire here. I want to come here.
And that was through the smoke.
That was with the smoke. So go figure, right? In the end, what does all this tell you? Where does this data go?
Well, the travel industry that's out there, and that could be anybody from hoteliers to restaurants to people who promote Montana and all that sort of stuff. They get this information and they can sort through it and decide what changes they might make or whatever. You know, in the end, we'll go back to the recycling. And again, this is sort of my bias because I do my own recycling and take it over, you know, haul it over every other week or whatever. Maybe at some point, Montana will figure out how we can do more recycling that is along the roads, you know, the gas stations where the visitors are. And the geo traveler is looking for that. That's just one example. We can't do anything about road conditions, so to speak. But if there are serious issues, we let the highway department know. that something is amiss here and this is what people are saying. So we do get it out to folks who probably might be able to do things with the information.
Mm-hmm.
And then from a marketing point of view, obviously, with all the positive comments, heck, I just did a search of the word love in these comments. Over 300 times love was mentioned. It didn't mean like I love my spouse. It was I love Montana. And so from a marketing perspective, there's a lot of comments that could be taken out and shown to the public, as in those who we want to come visit and say, look, people come here and this is what they say about Montana.
Last question. Summer 2013 starting to wind to a close here. I know the final numbers won't be in for a while, but what are you hearing? How did it go from a tourism perspective?
You know, it's looking like it was a good year. It's interesting that you should ask. I just was on the National Park Service stats website, yeah. And actually July in Yellowstone is down from last year. That's kind of a mixed message because when you talk to hoteliers and that sort of thing, they're having a pretty good year, summer, I should say. I'm thinking we're going to be up just from what I'm hearing and seeing, and you do see a lot of RVs out on the roadways, and that's an indication of lots of travel going on. But maybe there's more going in the RVs and less in the motels. Don't know that yet, but that's a possibility because RV sales are up around the country. And as the baby boomers are buying, you know, they're getting more time and they're starting to buy something that they can carry with them and sleep in. That's, you know, a different type of a population. Doesn't mean that they're not out doing the geotourism type stuff either, because you see these RVs. They've got bikes, they've got a boat, they've got a kayak on top. I mean, they are active folks, many of them.
Norman Nickerson, director of the University of Montana Institute for Tourism and Recreation Research. Again, thanks a lot for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
In tonight's weather forecast for west of the Divide, tonight calls for partly cloudy skies with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Lows will be in the upper 40s to mid-50s. Tomorrow expect partly cloudy skies with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs will be in the 80s. For central Montana tonight, look for mostly cloudy skies, then clearing. A chance of isolated showers and thunderstorms are likely early in the evening. Lows will stay in the upper 50s to lower 60s. Tomorrow calls for sunny skies with a slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. Highs will stay around 85 to 95 degrees. And for southwest Montana, tonight expect partly cloudy skies with scattered showers and thunderstorms early in the evening. Lows will be in the 50s. Tomorrow look for increasing clouds with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs will stick around 80 to 90 degrees. Currently in our listening area, Helena is 76 with partly cloudy conditions. In Kalispell, it's sunny and 79 degrees. Butte has 69 under sunny skies. Great Falls is cloudy with 82 degrees. Here in Missoula, the temperature under sunny skies is 82 degrees. It's 75 and partly cloudy in Dillon. In Hamilton, it's sunny and 84 degrees. Libby has 80 with partly cloudy conditions. And in Polson, skies are clear and it's 82 degrees. And off the editorial comments of Mary Sheehy Moe.
Years ago today, Martin Luther King Jr. delivered his I Have a Dream speech as the March on Washington drew to a close. The nation was wowed. But as good as the speech is, to appreciate the full range of King's gifts, you must read the letter from Birmingham Jail he wrote 5 months earlier. As an example of persuasive writing, it's top drawer. It matches the I Have a Dream speech in imagery and musicality, but surpasses it in rhetorical genius. The letter was written in response to an editorial King read in jail, written by 8 white clergymen. The preachers dismissed him as an outside agitator, a Georgian meddling in Alabama business. They called him and his fellow protesters extremists, taking unlawful actions that fired up tensions best left tamped down. They told him and his colleagues to be patient. Wait, these things take time. Point by point, Dr. King refuted their arguments. A meddling outsider? Whatever state we live in, he observed, we're all citizens of the same country. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny, he wrote. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. An extremist, he reminded the clergy that Jesus, Paul, Martin Luther, John Bunyan, Abraham Lincoln, and Thomas Jefferson could also be viewed as extremists. The question is not whether we will be extremists, King wrote, but what kind of extremists we will be. Will we be extremists for hate or for love? Will we be extremists for the preservation of injustice or for the extension of justice? Be patient. In a single sentence that is King at his best, he schooled his readers on the realities of being black in America. Perhaps it is easy for those who have never felt the stinging darts of segregation to say, wait. But when you have seen vicious mobs lynch your mothers and fathers at will and drown your sisters and brothers at whim, when you have seen hate-filled policemen curse, kick, and even kill your black brothers and sisters, when you see the vast majority of your Negro brothers smothering in an airtight cage of poverty in the midst of an affluent society, when you suddenly find your tongue twisted and your speech stammering as you seek to explain to your six-year-old daughter why she can't go to the public amusement park that has just been advertised on television, and see tears welling up in her eyes when she is told that Funtown is closed to colored children, and see ominous clouds of inferiority beginning to form in her little mental sky, and see her beginning to distort her personality by developing an unconscious bitterness toward white people. When you have to concoct an answer for a five-year-old son who is asking, Daddy, why do white people treat colored people so mean? When you take a cross-country drive and find it necessary to sleep night after night in the uncomfortable corners of your automobile because no motel will accept you. When your first name becomes nigger, your middle name becomes boy, however old you are, and your last name becomes John. When you are harried by day and haunted by night by the fact that you are a Negro, living constantly at tiptoe stance, never quite knowing what to expect next, and are plagued with inner fears and outer resentments. When you are forever fighting a degenerating sense of nobodiness, then you will understand why we find it difficult to wait. Finally, Dr. King took on the clergymen themselves, gently rebuking them. On sweltering summer days and crisp autumn mornings, I have looked at the South's beautiful churches with their lofty spires pointing heavenward. Over and over, I have found myself asking, what kind of people worship here? Who is their God? Where were their voices when the lips of Governor Barnett dripped with words of interposition and nullification? Where were they when Governor Wallace gave a clarion call for defiance and hatred? Where were their voices of support when bruised and weary Negro men and women decided to rise from the dark dungeons of complacency to the bright hills of creative protest? In deep disappointment, I have wept over the laxity of the church. But be assured that my tears have been tears of love. There can be no deep disappointment where there is not deep love. Yes, I love the church. Yes, I see the church as the body of Christ. But oh, how we have blemished and scarred that body through social neglect and through fear of being nonconformists. On August 28, 1963, the March on Washington made it clear that a great man was in our midst, a man whose love of learning and gift of language were the team of horses that carried his deep faith, bright hope, and unfailing love to the rescue of the issues of his time. Martin Luther King, Jr. was so bright he had completed his first bachelor's degree at the age of 19 and had married, taken on his first congregation, completed a second degree and his doctorate by the age of 25. He was only 34 years old when he wowed us all at the Lincoln Memorial, and he had less than 5 years left to live. What might have been had this blazing torch not been extinguished so soon? We will never know. Only his words live on, a source of inspiration always, but also, always, a tragic reminder of all that was lost when we lost the man who is arguably the South's most beautiful dreamer. This is Mary Sheehy Moe, retired, but still at heart that lover of language commonly called an English teacher.
Mary Sheehy Moe is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Courtney Anderson.
I'm Sarah Jovetich. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.